Welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. But here is slightly different. What's not different is that it's Monday, and that means we've got Francesca. Francesca Fiorentini, how's it going?
We're still here. Mm-hmm. I haven't moved. You've moved.
You look, I mean, you have a different background.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I was shamed out of my other background.
I liked it.
There was a lot of hot glue. It's there. Mm-hmm. A lot of hot glue went into it, but you know, as we settle into the reality that we are never leaving our homes, you know, we just got to get creative. So I'm slowly changing it up. I see you have a studio. Are you with some sort of company? Are you like?
Well, I decided like we're doing a show, and I want to be professional. And there was one of two ways to go. I could like get a physical set, or I could like actually improve my commentary and make it worthy of the name. That's complicated, but we've got this. So I'm back in the studio. We're being very safe. There is literally no one else in the studio. So the way I'm thinking of it is, phase one of the lockdown for TDR was we're all individually in our homes and we can't leave because it's the apocalypse. Now I'm alone broadcasting out of an empty media building that no one else can go into, nor would want to, which feels very apocalyptic in its own way.
Very much so.
But watchable.
It would have been really cool if there was like a little bit of moss growing over things.
Yeah, on me. I think there is. You said mold? But anyway, no, I brought some of my games, so it's not a total break from the past. And yeah, I'm sitting here by myself. It's a little bit weird, but I think it's going to be fun. And I'm glad that you're here with us.
Good to be here.
So we've got a lot that we're going to be talking about today, because of course, this is the start of the RNC. It's the morning, but Trump's already speaking on day one of his convention. So we're going to go through all the ways that the convention is off the rails. We'll have that for you very soon. But in addition, we have, you know, some really tragic news involving Jacob Blake and another just totally needless instance of police brutality. We've got an update on what Republicans think about COVID. That's always been fun as the death count has risen. Vaccines and Trump's reelection, an interesting little nexus that might meet between those. And Kellyanne Conway, we're going to bid her adieu by looking back over some of her highlights and lowlights, so that should be fun. But yeah, no, yeah, just getting ready for the week. It's gonna be a rough one. What are your expectations? You ready mentally for it?
Trucks. I want more trucks. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think we might get it. I think he might drive through a wall in a truck, not intentionally, at some point this week. So, and for everyone who is already, you know, sitting with, oh my God, there's over 5,000 of you already watching. Okay, well then answer me this. Why are there 600 likes? You slackers. See, this is, they say that we're slackers, millennial leftists and all that. You Zoomers, those of you who would like to Zoom but can't because it's broken, let's hit the like button. Come on, let people know that this is active. The algorithm is not going to algorithm itself. But anyway, with that, why don't we launch into our first topic, Francesca?
Do it.
Okay. It is day one of the RNC, sort of. It's a convention, but it is not like any RNC before. And I don't mean that it's digital, like how the DNC was different. Obviously, that was different. We live in Mad Max times. No, this is different in far more ways. So first of all, in terms of ethics, the president is going to be delivering his speech. And this quote says speech. Turns out it's speeches live from the White House after being forced to scrap plans to deliver the address to a large audience in Jacksonville, Florida because of the pandemic. He'd prefer to be in front of an audience. I'd prefer that he took the pandemic seriously. So we each did get what we wanted out of this. So not only is he going to be doing it from the White House, which no president has done, considered, you know, a violation of ethics. You're not supposed to do that, but it's Trump. He's going to do whatever he wants. He is, get this, speaking every day of the convention. Mm-hmm. He's already speaking now. And I know this only because I happen to be on Twitter and Brett tweeted he was talking on day one of his convention about how many TVs there are on Air Force One.
Yes. Ooh, we're gonna hear so much about sharks.
Mm-hmm.
So don't much like about them. Sharks and like water them. Pressure.
Do you think he's gonna do the water pressure?
Oh, he's got to, because at this point he is a parody of a parody of a parody of himself. He's living in a world of his own parody. And he knows that even though that was like that, that's a hit, that's a classic, you know? That's like the top 1% for Bernie, except, you know, fascist and scary.
Yeah, I think it might have been too easy of a question to ask if he's gonna do the water pressure. Obviously, he's gonna 1, 2, 3. Obviously, he's gonna do that. The question is, and I want everyone in the chat to answer this, yes or no. Does he do the water pressure literally every day? Does he? Because there was a reporter who was like, is he just gonna cover the same information every time? Have you watched him? Yeah, no, that's all he does. He has like a couple of rotating bits, but mostly it's to script.
And this is why, if you want to see something new out of Trump's repertoire, you don't want to see him drinking water with one hand. You know what we have to ask for. Show us the big boy pants. Show us that they exist. What are they? Are they Jockey Haynes? Are they Bonobo? Do they make underwear? Not sure. What's the bulge about? Give it to us. Hashtag show us the undies, RNC 2020.
Yeah. Oh God. I prefer if you did not, but sure. Skip, I'm gonna jump ahead to the big picture. So another thing that's different about this convention, when they announced the big speakers, you know, not just the online grifters like the guy who totally didn't do anything wrong at that protest with the Native American activist, or the couple that you only know exists because they pointed loaded weapons at totally peaceful protesters. Not those, I'm talking about the serious people. They announced 12 originally. Let's bring this up. You'll notice half of them are Trumps. And I'm not even counting one of the girlfriends who hypothetically would boost it even more. Wait, I think she's up there, right? Well, she's speaking anyway. So half. Now, like we've talked a lot about the party becoming a cult of personality and Trump effectively ruling over like a tin pot familial dictatorship. But this is making it a little bit obvious that not only is Trump gonna speak every day, but a lot of the other people are gonna be various Trumps. Even Tiffany's are gonna be speaking there. It is just Trump from floor to ceiling. I can smell it already.
That's just an image of the people who still pick up his phone calls. Like that's it. You know, that's the people who actually, yeah. The people like send a voicemail to everyone else. Those are the people who are like, fine. Like,
yeah.
Those are just, and it's so funny because remember the rising stars, we're being promised rising stars.
Yeah.
You know that is the dude who smirked down a Native American protester.
Totally.
And like the couple who came out in their khakis with weapons, semi-automatics and stuff.
Yep.
Like, they're rising stars. And there's gonna be some OAN people, obs.
Obviously, yeah. Oh, I mean, is the really crazy one gonna be there? I wonder, the one John Oliver talked about. Anyway, so a few others, a few of the funny notes about the cast. The Candace Owens didn't get a spot. That's kind of funny. And then, so I saw on the full list of who's speaking today, the first name I saw was Charlie Kirk, which is funny. And then I saw, and I swear to God, I didn't know he hosts a show every day. Did anybody know that? They said it's like, I've literally never heard that he hosted a show. I thought he just did that, you know, the fake college grifty thing with the right wing billionaires. He hosts a show.
I feel like it sounds something like, why are girls like so, anyway, we'll be right back.
I'd watch it. I think that's pretty good. I would watch that. Okay, so we've got the fact that they're all Trumps and that Trump's gonna speak every day, and maybe the last one will be scripted. I guarantee the first four will be about how he hates sharks and 1, 2, and I won't mention the toilet, but you know what I'm talking about. And also, so one of the big things that happens at these conventions, because remember, these are very traditional things stretching back hundreds of years, and you know, there's a lot that has to get done there that really doesn't make any sense to a regular person, but that's what happens there. And one of those things is passing a platform. Remember last week when the Democrats passed theirs and it was garbage and we hated it? Well, the RNC decided we're not gonna risk turning off our voters anymore. We're just not gonna have one. Literally, they're not gonna pass a new platform. I'm not joking or exaggerating. Their party platform is effectively, we enthusiastically support the president's America First agenda. They don't give more details of why or what that is because they can't. It's just whatever Trump babbles about every night this week, that's what we support, I guess.
Yeah,
they explicitly say there's no
underlined, like, you know, brackets. what Trump will mention is what we stand for. And this is, but it's okay, two things. One, that reveals that party platforms aren't always that important, right?
Apparently.
I mean, they are for if you want to actually, like, you know, gather a base up, you know, get some support. I know that on the Democratic side, there's been good discussions and fights over the Democratic Party platform, whether or not the Democrats even make good on that platform. That's what I mean. That's what I mean when I say, like, how much does it really matter? But it sets a course for, you know, your entire party. I think maybe they just haven't gotten it back from Russia yet. Like, Putin's still, like, you know, crossing the I's or dotting the T's, you know, because he's got it backwards. And
it's, you know, it's like, Cyrillic's a different alphabet, honestly.
It's very different. But, like, this is the thing, is like, the party has been laid bare for exactly what it is, which is a massive transfer of wealth to the already wealthy. That's all it is. And this is their Trojan horse, idiot populist with a red hat on and lots of bronzer, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. The objective in terms of policy is privatize as much as possible and then loot it. Just take it and hand it to the people that they like them, and distract their base by just giving them racism. Just racism, that's it. That's the only thing. They explicitly say in what we showed you that any motion to amend the 2016 platform or to adopt a new one, including any motion to suspend the procedures that will allow doing so, will be ruled out of order. So it's not just that they're not gonna do it, it's that if anybody tries to, they can't do it. They're setting up the rules for the conventions that they can't do it, which means that the 2016 platform remains as their most recent platform. So let's see if we can learn anything about what they plan to do based on what's in that platform. So because it can't be amended, we have to assume that they continue to support that all international executive agreements and political arrangements entered into by the current administration must be deemed null and void as mere expressions of the current president's preferences. That's that's refreshing, because a lot of them were really bad. I guess they don't like them. That's what their platform says. What a stupid world we live in. It's literally just, let's just have Trump will get up there, and then Uday and Kusei will give speeches, and then that's it. That's all we need. It's just a rock at this point.
I think, and we haven't discussed this, but look, the RNC is really taking advantage of this pandemic, because I'm gonna be honest with you, given who was treasurer for forever and how much money they have and how much money they aren't getting from the NRA, I think they would have had to go virtual anyway, whether there was a pandemic or not. They have no money left, no money left. There was no way it was gonna be anything like 2016. They are a shell of themselves, right? Like, how many different, so I think they're like, this is the best thing that could have happened to them, is actually being virtual. I think it would have been virtual anyway.
I know some people in the audience might be thinking, well, Trump's rich, Trump could just pay for it. Yeah, he could pay for stuff. That's the thing that's gonna happen. So yeah, we'll have to see. Now, I wanna talk a little bit about, let's see, make sure we said that, speaking for the White House, it's ridiculous. One more ridiculous thing. And so this isn't gonna really shock you. And considering the people that we're talking about that are being excluded, it's not like they were great, but this, according to John Haltewanger of Business Insider, the RNC will feature no former GOP presidents nor ex-GOP nominees. In 2016, the only ex-nominee to attend was Bob Dole, and it was the first GOP convention in roughly 40 years in which a Bush did not speak. This year's DNC featured all living Dem presidents and prominent Republicans. Exactly, that's unfortunate. Yeah, it's just like the people who actually ruled as Republicans don't want anything to do with this, and I get it. They sucked. Not saying they didn't suck. They sucked, and it was consequential, and hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives because of how they sucked. But it's just the Trump show. It's just we have literally no specific expectations except that he will continue to give us tax breaks, and he'll tear apart Medicare and Medicaid, and he'll tear apart Social Security, and he'll give the money to us. And whatever, just give us that. We don't care. Just give him the mic and just let him babble for like an hour. We all think he's badass crazy anyway. Let's just do that. And it's effectively, you know, bread and circuses and all that, except it's, you know, racism and 1, 2, 3.
It's I mean, it worked in 2016. I was there, you were there in the RNC in 2016. And we were like, how is the fringiest fringe of the fringe gonna pull this off? And they did. I mean, that was seen as a virtue, not having any former presidents. And honestly, maybe it is a virtue, right? Like, obviously, I would love for him to try and resuscitate Bush. That would be so beautiful. I really, really would, mostly because I just want to see his
speech.
I just want to see Bush sort of like bring out. I just want to see him paint, actually, a little bit of like Bob Ross
stage.
But Yeah.
Just on a Twitch stream of George W. Like painting.
Yes.
No, it would be a weird throwback to hear him speak. I haven't heard him speak in literally years.
You know what? And I do not miss him. I'm not someone who's like, oh, Bush was better. No.
Definitely.
But hearing his voice, I think I would either go immediately into shock and like just like start having a seizure, or like be a little bit relaxed.
It was terrible. I mean, I know you, I think you got tapped into politics earlier in life than I did, but my awakening was in the thick of the darkness of the Bush years. So no, I'm not one of those people that's gonna forget that. But there are aspects of it I'd prefer, aspects that maintained a little bit of my sanity.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today, and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Now let's see what we can learn. So the RNC is not gonna have a new platform. We get that, it's whatever Trump wants. So follow-up question, what does Trump want? What is the second term gonna be about? And so we have a tweet from Annie Carney, reporter, who said he was talking with Steve Hilton, Trump was, and said, "I would strengthen what we've done and I would do new things." Oh, good. I have no follow-up questions. I'm gonna write a book on it now. So now that's funny. Here's the funnier thing. She acknowledged this is the fifth time he's been asked the specific question, what are you gonna do with your second term, in just the last 2 months, multiple times by Sean Hannity. Like, it is a comfier environment for him than my bed is for me, and he has not been able to come up with an answer yet. It's whatever. The Republicans don't know, his base doesn't know, and he doesn't know literally anything. Now we're gonna get to a little bit of it, but I would ask you first, like, do you have expectations? Do you think he will make clear anything about his agenda in today's speech or any of the follow-on speeches this week?
Donald Trump will vote for Joe Biden. Do not mistake that. He's gonna get into the little polling booth, close the little curtain, look both ways, and vote for Joe Biden. Look, I thought he would maybe vote for Clinton in 2016. I don't think he did, because he was like, what if this might be fun, you know? Because he never wanted to be president, and now he truly does not want four more years, to the point where he can't even like regurgitate his campaign slogans for the next 4 years. You're absolutely right. You can't articulate what you want to do. You ramble when you get a softball question from your friend Sean Hannity. All he has to say is more law and order, more police. I don't know. Just do what your campaign is doing. But he's not even doing that. Like, Stephen Miller not able to help him out on this one?
It's not like you don't make a good case, but I need more evidence before I'm gonna believe that. I think dude loves the spotlight, and this is the biggest spotlight that you can have, I think. Hey, we're a democracy. Sure, yes. We're a democracy in America. Let's ask chat. Does he wanna get reelected or doesn't wanna get reelected? I'm curious. I think he wants to. He knows he has power that he can, like, not to do a lot of things, because he's not smart enough or curious enough about the world to come up with things to do. But he can take money. He can do that, and he can give it to his friends, and he can just divert resources to his kids and stuff like that. I think he hates parts of it, definitely. And if he doesn't get reelected, he's still gonna be a constant presence on Fox News and everything. But I think he likes it too much.
Here's a question. 4 more years of Trump, does he like make, you know, red-hatted kid like chief of staff and like make, you know, the sort of like Bonnie and Clyde, KKK Bonnie and Clyde, like you know, are they part of the cabinet too? Is he picking randos, or does the Trump administration just reset and we go back through everyone who's resigned and written a book? It's like Reince Priebus comes back.
Scaramucci.
Yeah, exactly. Sean Spicer's there, and we're just like, I mean, honestly, that's what I think is what would happen. Because they'd be like, look, my book, not selling anymore. I Dance with the Stars, gotta come back on this train.
Yeah. I don't know. I will just quickly say, and again, I've said this multiple times, I really don't care about this kid. I just didn't buy the development of that story, the idea that he was just totally wrong place, wrong time. He doesn't think anything bad towards, you know, Native Americans or anyone who's not white. Yeah, just wait and follow him, follow his career. Let's see what happens. Let's see if he just goes about his life as a normal private citizen with no racial animus or anything like that. Or let's see if he tries to chase that dragon and just tries to get on the right wing shows, and he's on Fox News, and now he's got a podcast. Oh, let's see, because we were wrong, remember? Left was wrong to imply anything about what he thinks about politics, right? Just a regular kid. Okay, well, let's see, let's find out.
I completely agree with you, John.
Anyway,
100%.
Supreme Court. Yeah, and like, I don't remember his name, honestly.
No.
Like, and I really don't care. And if he wants to be a private citizen, leave him alone. He can be a private citizen. Once you sue multiple media companies, it's a little bit more difficult to do that. But anyway, okay. So as to what he's supposedly going to do, while he's not going to know much of this or say much of it in his multiple speeches this week, Trump and his campaign did put out some of his goals for a second term. And so I don't want to pop through a few of these. So one is on a section called eradicate COVID-19. Wait, I thought we already eradicated it. First is develop a vaccine by the end of 2020. Okay, laudable goal, and we're gonna talk about that more later on the show. The number two is return to normal in 2021. Dude, same. That's my goal too, that's all I want. And then like things like making the supplies available, refilling stockpiles. Dude says every day that it's not his job, it's the governor's job. Well, stop implying that you're gonna suddenly, you know, be some sort of leader when you've been passing the buck for months at this point. No, if you did the failure, you don't get to suddenly imply success for things that you hypothetically would do someday. That whole section is basically, give me a vaccine. That's it. That's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. We also have on healthcare, things like cut prescription drug prices, put patients and doctors back in charge of our healthcare system. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. And I doubt he's gonna do much, if anything, to cut prescription drug prices. Lowering the premiums, what is he gonna do? He told us like, what, was it a month ago that in 2 weeks he's gonna have his healthcare plan? He told us the same thing 3 years ago. It's never gonna happen. There's no plan, there's nothing coming. Stop lying. He's gonna cover all pre-existing conditions. No, we have that. You're the one trying to take it away. We've got that already. They're covered. So he can just put the things in there that like he wants to imply don't exist, and not a single Trump voter is gonna look at that and be like, wait, that's not true. Didn't the ACA provide protections for that?
We're gonna get rid of child labor. They've been in the coal mines for too long. Like, You're absolutely right. I mean, healthcare is a really interesting one. And this is, of course, where I get mad at the Democrats for not pushing harder. But even people like Ted Cruz know that they've lost the discussion around healthcare. They've lost the debate. I mean, they're still gonna try and repeal the ACA, but they have no alternative because they realize, hey, the ACA is kind of great if you're a private health insurer and if you invest in private health insurance companies. Like, they're billionaires too. So why is this not a win-win for Republicans, Democrats, and the private health insurance industry? And yet, public opinion keeps on moving farther and farther, not left, but just, hey, we should cover everyone regardless of their ability to pay. And no, it shouldn't be means tested. And yes, it should be universal. Like, let's just do it already. So it's interesting just how much has changed in 10 years.
I mean, both parties have issues that they run on every 4 years. And then when they're in power, they do literally nothing to change it because it turns out it's just more convenient to run on it than to do anything. Covering all pre-existing conditions. You know, under a second term, I'm going to develop the horseless carriage. No, we have the horseless carriage. No, we already have that. Anyway, protect Social Security, Medicare.
He's gonna like roll out penicillin and just be like, look what we've got.
I invented
it. COVID cure. Like, no, it's not. Spell it penicillin.
Yeah, well, penicillin might be a little bit complicated for him. He's gonna pull something out of his easy bake oven and ask for applause. Okay, so on education, I swear to God, this is the entire thing. So one is provide school choice to every child in America. That just means privatize education. Oh. And teach American exceptionalism. So privatize it and then just teach kids we're the best. They ignore all the issues we have. We don't need to fix anything and we're not going to. We're the best. That's it. That's the whole section on education. And then, of course, this big section on defend our police. Yeah, it's just, you know, Antifa needs to be brought to justice. All of it. All of Antifa needs to be brought to justice. Everybody.
Violent extremist groups.
I've literally never heard cashless bail as a thing to be attacked. They're implying that, and like, no, you literally, if you don't have a bunch of money, you're getting locked up. This is the right wing.
And cashless bail.
I've never heard that before as a thing. It's a new term. End cashless bail. We just got a little bit of it a week ago. What are you talking about? Okay. We're gonna be tuning in. It's gonna be crazy. I think tomorrow I'm leading the Young Turks coverage of the RNC with Ben Dixon. But we're gonna be doing coverage every night as we did last week. So definitely tune in starting at, I think, 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern. We're gonna be doing coverage and it's gonna be something. Like, you don't think Don Jr. is gonna like stand behind a giant Q podium or something? It's gonna be. I hope that CNN and MSNBC
making podiums.
Maybe. I hope that they are ready for this because they're gonna say crazy. They're gonna like not just crazy. They're gonna talk about satanic pedophile cannibals and stuff like that. Like it's.
Well, this is actually an interesting test for mainstream news networks because many of them have refused to run Trump campaign rallies. Because of, you know, misinformation, et cetera, and like, you know, racism and stoking conspiracy theories. But are they gonna run this whole thing just top to bottom? Are they gonna give it the same treatment? Right. And that's the thing is like, you know, obviously the right will claim that there's bias. Yeah, man. Cause you got nut jobs up there and they're spewing racist things and racist coded language. You know, you don't get this. You don't get like every night 3 hours of a you know, because what they're gonna do in the dead air is they're just gonna fill it with Trump campaign advertisement, which they're already buying on MSNBC anyway. So you know, pay them for it at least.
Yeah, front page of YouTube and all that. Yeah, and are they gonna have that Marjorie Taylor Greene? I think her name is the QAnon candidate. Oh, one of the QAnon candidates, because they have a Senate candidate as well that won a primary that believes in QAnon. Are they gonna let her speak and talk about Q? You don't think they won't? They got Matt Gaetz up there. Dude's hanging out with Laura Loomer like every day now.
Is Q like their Medicare for All, where it's just like you can allude to it, but you can't say Medicare for All? Like for the Democrats?
I don't know. I mean, that is the future, and some would argue the core of the Republican Party. At some point, they're gonna embrace it even more. Like the which is the duller Trump son, Eric. He put up on Instagram a big Q. Like the image was just a Q with the American flag colors. That's it. He eventually took it down, but he put it up. You don't think Trump is already sort of like giving like a little wink to QAnon? Many of you have probably already seen going around since late yesterday in Kenosha, Wisconsin, another absolutely horrendous incident of needless police brutality involving the shooting multiple times of one Jacob Blake. We had a long talk about whether to show the footage. we have basically landed on not showing it protects the cops from people understanding just how needless, how unacceptable, how impossible to understand the situation is. So we're going to show you the footage, but I want you to understand that this is footage of a person being shot. It is graphic. So proceed, if you will. Here is the footage.
Graphic video posted on Facebook shows the moment an encounter between Jacob Blake and Kenosha police quickly escalated. Screams rang out as police fired at least 7 shots Sunday evening. Blake appears to have been shot in the back as he entered the driver's side of an SUV at gunpoint. His children were reportedly in the vehicle. It is unclear whether police believe they saw a weapon.
And I wouldn't care anyway. And I'm not at this point interested in what the cops have to say about that very much. Now, Jacob Blake was transported to the hospital in serious condition, according to police. His father said on Facebook that his son is alive and in stable condition. Family friend Daniel Poneman tweeted that Blake is out of surgery in the ICU and is expected to make it, which I have to say that after seeing that footage, seems like a miracle. I can't imagine how anyone could survive what the cops did to him.
Yes, I'm so thankful that this story ends in his survival and just like thinking of his family and the entire community and what they had to go through and what they are going through. I just watched that video and I think cowards, what effing cowards the police are. You do not deserve a gun, a badge, anything. Let's continue to talk about defunding the police. Let's talk about demilitarizing the police, all right? I saw that video first on my phone, it was kind of small. And I was like, well, maybe this officer mistakenly shot him, right? Sort of like, maybe the gun went off. Looking at it again, there's a lot of intention in that police officer and what he did and grabbing him by the shirt. Even as soon as he opened the car door, it seemed like he was going to shoot him for whatever reason. I'm sure he'll claim that he feared for his life. These are cowards. They don't deserve to police our streets. They don't deserve to protect us. And absolutely, we can't forget the racism that is involved in shooting a man in the back while his family is watching.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Absolute cowards, insane. And this is, what else could you expect from a system that trains cops that if you are ever scared at all, if you get a single goosebump, just start shooting. Just shoot and shoot over and over, empty every bullet you have. If you ever get one tingle of fear, then start shooting. Oh, and by the way, black people, you should be as scared of them as possible. Every time you see them, you should be terrified. And if you get terrified, you should start shooting. We teach them those two things societally and in terms of police training. And this is the only possible outcome to that. God, you shoot a person in the back and you shoot them that many times. There are police officers in other countries that you would expect you would never fire that many shots in your career as a police officer. And they unload into a guy's back with the children just feet away having to watch that, believing that their father has been brutally murdered in front of them and could still die. Thankfully has not. It is just a miracle that he is not. By the way, can we show the picture of the victim and the kids that had to watch this totally needless violence from the police again? That he should have to go through this, that we've gone through all these protests for months and he couldn't know that, you know, he probably feared that he would be one of those people that would be attacked in this way, but couldn't know it. And those cops have just been going about their day, just waiting for their opportunity to participate in this. And you know, maybe with a couple more days, we'll find out about the record if they've engaged in any violence before. But this is absolutely insane. And like, they haven't said yet if they thought that he had a gun. Every single right winger who is already saying that Jacob was asking for it believes that gun owners deserve more rights than literally anyone in the world. Yes. When those militia members were pointing their rifles in a standoff with cops, nobody was saying that's justification for the cops to shoot them. But he had a gun. What violent, what threatening thing was he was doing? He was facing away from them into a car packed with his children. And that was too much. I don't care if he has a gun, if he doesn't have a gun, it doesn't matter. Totally no justification for what happened.
None at all. Absolutely right. I mean, and I think, you know, back to what you were saying, what is it like? Is it in training that when your fellow police officer starts shooting, you immediately have to join in? Why was Breonna Taylor shot that many times, right? By what, 3 cops? Like, What is this? Why are we shooting to kill? You don't think that one shot, let's say, obviously, which is completely unnecessary
and unacceptable,
that one shot wouldn't stop someone, even if you did fear for your life? Come on. That's proof that it's all BS. And when I say demilitarize the police, I absolutely agree with that. What if that was a taser instead of a gun? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, why not? And the only reason we can't demilitarize the police is because we've got way too many guns among the population. So gun control is absolutely part of this discussion. I know that we don't love to make them one because we're like, oh my gosh, too much to think about. But it really is. I do believe in keeping police officers safe. It isn't an easy job. But I also believe there are many other weapons that you can use that aren't guns. And I also believe we need to get other guns off the streets.
Yeah, we send them everywhere loaded to take down an elephant. Like everywhere they go, and they're trained to use it. They're not trained. They're like, it is not a last resort. Nobody gets to pretend that that's what's actually going on. And they get backed into a corner and they have to do it. They're trained to take out their gun at a moment's notice. Doesn't matter if it's a kid, whatever, take out your gun. And if you just, oh God, if you feel scared, even briefly, just begin shooting and don't stop until you've run out of bullets. And everyone around you, as you pointed out, needs to start shooting too. It's absolute madness.
Because we will protect you. Because the police unions and the DAs and the prosecutors, everyone will protect you.
Yep.
And that's why you have to charge the cops and arrest the cops and sentence the cops, because otherwise that protection will still reign.
And I saw Bernie was calling for that. As of right now, the cops have been put on administrative leave. Well, that's good. So they don't have to work, but they get paid. That's wonderful. That's consequences right there. And right now we're in the middle of the RNC where all they have to say about the police is we need to fund them more. We need to increase consequences for people who do anything to the cops that the cops don't like. In Tennessee, I think it was, it might have been Indiana, one of the two states. If you camp out on state property as a part of a protest, they have changed the penalty from a misdemeanor to a felony. So you will literally lose your right to vote if you protest. The Free Speech Brigade online must be losing it over this. Dave Rubin, his head just exploded when he saw that. Yes. Literally being stripped of your democratic rights if you camp somewhere they don't like. But weird, no, they don't talk about that. I guess they must mean some other sort of speech when they talk about that. The pandemic continues. 1,000+ people dying still on average every single day. Seems to me and probably to most of you to be unacceptable. But for certain type of people, not necessarily, because a poll went out. The number of US deaths from coronavirus has it been acceptable or has it been not acceptable? Turns out it depends on your party identification. Let's bring this up. 57% of Republicans think it's acceptable. 177,000 deaths and rising every minute is acceptable. I accept it. It's okay. Now, we knew they accepted it. We knew that they didn't have a problem with it, but they will actually say that they're okay with it. What a failure of a country, of a people, that you can get that result.
Yeah.
CBS News, not just some random online poll. It's not Reddit. It's not 4chan. They're like, no, no, yeah, 177,000. If Obama had 7, I would literally never stop talking about it. But 177,000, yeah, no, that's good. And I want more of this. I want 4 more years of everything that 2020 has been.
I mean, it is hard to have empathy for folks like this and try to understand that mindset. It is back to the age old, are all Trump supporters racist? Yes, I think so. Enough to overlook the racism, right? Which is racist in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're following their leader. That's exactly what Trump wants them to say. And I think truly, and we know that this isn't really the case, that it is indiscriminate when it comes to who can be infected, age, race, it doesn't matter. But that disproportionately, COVID is hitting the black and brown community. African Americans, Latinos, Native Americans, Polynesians, I know in Los Angeles County, for example, are suffering far worse. They have higher mortality rates. And so if you aren't from those communities, slash you love to demonize them and other them, well, they're not in your beloved community under Jesus Christ. You know what I mean? Like they're expendable. You know, this is what he would have wanted. Q said, etc. Yep. At the end of the day, it's eugenics. At the end of the day, you're okay with people who don't look like you dying. And hey, they must have deserved it. Yeah. So, I mean, I want to say, well, those Republicans, there must be fewer people identifying as Republican. Hey, independents are 67%, not, you know, say it's unacceptable. Maybe some of them went to the independent side.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, that's possible. Let's bring back up that chart, because 10% of Democrats are like,
yeah, no, I accept this.
Oh yeah, yeah, a lot of people died, but yeah, no, that's okay. I'm okay with that. 1 in 10 Democrats. I mean, I guess 10% of anyone will say whatever you want, but and yes, well, okay. So 43% of Republicans say it's not acceptable. Are they not merciful? I ask you, are they not merciful?
Honestly, I mean, but this is the thing with like, oh, well, only 3% of the population would die. That's like 3 million people, right? Or whatever the math is, it's millions and millions of people. Are you okay with that many people dying, including potentially your own family? Yeah. I mean, it's only a small percentage. What? More than every foreign war we fought. A Vietnam plus a Vietnam plus an Afghanistan and like 85 9/11s.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 85, it's like 3 Vietnams. I don't know if I will remember to bring this graphic back every time. But like, just fill it in mentally for yourself. When I refer to it not as a party, but as a death cult, this is what I mean. They're okay with us all dying. They're fine with it. 57%. We have failed worse than any other country, and we're more okay with failure than any other country. Look at this. I know it's boring, and people stop watching when I talk about the nature of reality and whether we have a good grasp of it and whether we care about what we believe is true is actually true, right? That's abstract. It's removed from people's lives. 75% of Republicans say the US is in better condition than it was 4 years ago. They didn't say that in January. They said that now. 2020, you know, all the jokes, worst year ever, right? Am I right? Worst year ever? No, 3 out of 4 Republicans are like, this is better than 2016. Now I'll grant you, 2016 sucked, but the unemployment rate is like twice as high. The economy's destroyed, right? Don't they talk about how we have to recover? 1,000 people are dying from a totally needless pandemic right now. They say it's better than it was, and Trump deserves credit for that. I agree, he deserves credit for the state of 2020. But man, 25% of America at large says it's better off than 4 years ago. What is our world? What is left to us at this point? Can a country be insane? Has a country ever had the collective delusions that ours is suffering under? Consequential delusions.
Yes, yes. I think that, look, once the myths of this country become so fragile, they get more and more shrill. I mean, I think we can, that 25%, I'm looking at Fox News directly, right? Like the folks who say that things are better, I'm looking at Fox News directly. And when you have more and more people in agreement that we need things like Medicare for all, we need things like, you know, accessible or tuition free college, that we need to have our debt relieved, you know, when it comes to going to school, you know, that we need better education, all the things, you know, we have to rein in climate. Once there's more consensus, there's the other side will be shriller and shriller and shriller. Mm. Once we start to talk about, hey, maybe, you know, we haven't really reckoned with our history of slavery. Oh, you're anti-American, you know, like, so this, you know, it makes sense. It makes sense that, you know, they are leading the charge for people of lemmings off the cliff. So yes, I think it gets shriller. It's darkest before the dawn. It's shrillest before the dawn. And I hope we get to that dawn.
Jeez, oh God. No, that's enough news for now. Donald Trump has been on a storm talking about the FDA and vaccines, tweeting over the weekend, the deep state or whoever over at the FDA is making it very difficult for drug companies to get people in order to test the vaccines and therapeutics. Obviously, they are hoping to delay the answer until after November 3rd. Must focus on speed. Oh, I bet you do, buddy. And saving lives. Okay, so the FDA is the deep state and they don't want a vaccine because a vaccine would help Trump. So they are willingly pushing it off so that more people die to hurt Trump. That's what he's saying. It's not just him. According to two sources in a Monday meeting this last week, Donald Trump's trade advisor, why is the trade advisor in this story? I don't know, but that's the White House. Peter Navarro aggressively confronted FDA officials saying, "You are all deep state and you need to get on Trump time." That's the expression Navarro uses to describe the speed that he says Trump demands. Not that Trump does anything, he's a lazy sack, but that's what he wants people to do. Yeah, so the trade advisor is also calling the FDA deep state. So they're all deep state. And they're trying to stop you from getting a vaccine. Thoughts?
God, this one hurts. But like, imagine you've worked for the FDA, even for just a few years, and someone just points a finger at you. You're deep state. Get on Trump time. can you just? This is the whole the age old question, right? Do you stay and try to do good, or do you leave and or get fired because you're not able to do your actual job? Can I just say, when it comes to the vaccine, Trump, if there is a vaccine, which of course, John, you're absolutely right. It makes no sense. Like the entire argument the FDA is like withholding a vaccine is utterly ridiculous. But even if there was, do you think he would throw his anti-vax base under the bus in order to tell people to go out and get this vaccine? No, as soon as there's a vaccine, Trump will be like, if you want it, do it. I hear it does things, it does weird things. We can't talk about the things, you know, it's like, what are you talking about? We already have a flu vaccine. People are being told to get more, get their flu shots this season so that they don't compound it with COVID. And there's a lot of folks who are like, nah, I'm good. For whatever reason, I'm good. And again, the anti-vax thing is insidious. It keeps going and going and going. And Trump absolutely would play into that. So it's so bonkers that he would ever promote a vaccine. Unless he could actually buy it and put his name on it, and he personally would make money from it, which maybe is the case with hydroxychloroquine, he wouldn't be pro-vax.
Yeah, I think that in the end, once it's available and it's out there, I agree. He will start to mimic that stuff. And Fox News already has. Jeanine Pirro said she won't under any circumstances take it. You can't trust the vaccines and all of that. But here is like the weird thing. It's that a lot of the vax people who aren't necessarily all right wing, there are lefties who are anti-vax and all that. That is being absorbed by Q, like all conspiracy theories are. The lizard people, the Illuminati, flat earth, all of it is getting into the Q thing. So they don't like vaccines, but they like everything that Trump says and believes that he's right. So they think he's right to say that the FDA is the deep state because the FDA is abiding by safety regulations, and they think that the FDA shouldn't abide by those safety regulations, even though they believe that vaccines aren't safe. They think the FDA should expedite it, making it less safe, and they probably won't take it, but they think that it's awful that it's being blocked,
right?
Because it should be out there so Trump can get reelected, but they'd never take it because that's how the machines get inside you. None of it makes any sense. And again, that's the worldview. You can believe anything you want, no matter how internally contradictory it is. Just believe what makes you feel good. And by the way, the vaccine that they're blocking from being developed is to cure a disease that they don't believe exists. And if it does exist, it's not really dangerous and it's not killing anyone. But how dare they block the vaccine for it, even though it's not real? None of this makes any sense. I'm not making any sense, but that is really what they believe. They don't think the disease is real. Okay. Now here's where it gets even darker. So Donald Trump tweeting about how the FDA is deep state and all of that. This is not just random, okay? There is a reason that he is putting pressure on them, and we should be worried about it because there are reasons to believe that he is going to push for this vaccine no matter the cost before the election. President Donald Trump is considering bypassing the standard testing procedures according to the Financial Times because he wants it before the election. He's apparently considering pressuring the US FDA to issue an emergency use authorization for a British vaccine in October. So he's gonna wait until right before the election, supposedly, and then say that we're gonna be using it here in America. The company developing it, AstraZeneca, said it hasn't discussed such an order with the Trump administration, which might be true, might not. We'll see. The British vaccine appeared relatively safe, to its credit, in a study of 1,000 patients reported in The Lancet late last month, though with several side effects. But here's a significant caveat. It's still not known if the vaccine prevents COVID or even lessens symptoms. So it turns out it doesn't appear to kill you, although it provides some side effects. We just have no idea if it does anything. So why not rush it to market? And it could be months before they do the larger trials on a larger population of people to see if it actually will prevent that. But we can't wait for that because it's got to be rushed out 2 weeks before the election to provide a boost to Donald Trump. That seems to be the plan.
Look, they will sell beet supplements that what's the former NRA chick who's currently hawking? Dana Loesch. I don't know. Whatever her name is and however I'm supposed to, like, she's hawking them. You got Alex Jones on the supplements. Milo, my favorite moment of last year, I think it was Milo taking those supplements on Alex Jones' show. So good.
I like beets. I can get behind that.
I like beets, but roasted. Like, if. If you could just make the vaccine in roasted beets, would love it. A little goat cheese, a little arugula.
That's how it gets to the lizard center of the brain faster.
Oh, right.
But anyway, yeah, no, they're like, as soon as I read this, I was thinking, well, yeah, no, of course. What? Because he's, what is he not going to rush a vaccine out right before the election, like in the week or two before the election? Why? Because it's unethical? Because it's dangerous? Because it's dishonest? What does that have to do with literally anything in American politics? He's 100% gonna do that. He's 1,000%. I understand that's not how percents work. He's totally gonna do that. And I just hope that Joe Biden and his campaign are planning for that. Because there's no way now that that's not going to be the October surprise. Maybe we invade Iran too. I'm not sure about that. But definitely they're announcing a vaccine, whether it ends up coming or not. He could announce a week before the election that we're giving emergency use authorization to that AstraZeneca thing. AstraZeneca could come out the next day and say, they've literally never talked to us about this and it's not ready to go. So what does that have to do with anything? What, because people will realize that he was being dishonest? No, it'll swing a million votes in a few swing states and he'll win. I'm terrified of this now. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it or underthinking it. I don't know. But I think he is totally gonna do this. And America, above all, just wants to go back to the froyo place. And so this will be a very powerful, albeit 100% dishonest message in the closing days of the election.
I'm worried he's gonna give people like held out until the last minute, and then Congress and the Senate is just gonna pass, you know, enhanced unemployment benefits again, even more relief, paycheck protection, et cetera, right before the election. That to me is what I'm more worried about, but it's true that sort of like his base potentially is more interested in miracle cures than anything else. A lot of things, look, the October surprise, who knows?
Who knows? I don't know. It's exciting. I can't wait to find out. They should pass the enhanced unemployment right now. Would it help Trump? Probably. Good. It would also help the people who are out of work.
Yes.
Pass it right now. I wish that they would. Doesn't seem like that's much of a priority. I mean, obviously the Democrats took the last week off, and now the RNC is taking the week off for, you know, the reality show. Nothing looks like it's going to happen anytime soon. Kellyanne Conway is apparently on her way out. Nobody saw that coming. I saw a tweet that with the Bannon announcement and now Kellyanne Conway, the writers of this whole thing are really wrapping up those plot threads in the last few months. But Kellyanne Conway is gonna be gone. And she sent out a message saying, I will be transitioning from the White House at the end of this month. George is also making changes. We disagreed about plenty, but we are united on what matters most, the kids. Our four children are teens and tweens starting a new academic year in middle school and high school, remotely from home for at least a few months. As millions of parents nationwide know, kids doing school from home require a level of attention and vigilance that is as unusual as these times. Yeah, why are these times so unusual, Kellyanne? No, you don't wanna be more specific? And George tweeted, so I'm withdrawing from Project Lincoln to devote more time to family matters, and I'll be taking a Twitter hiatus. Needless to say, I continue to support the Lincoln Project and its mission passionately. So that's the parents. We'll get to the rest of the family in just a minute, but Kellyanne Conway is gonna be leaving. We're gonna say goodbye to her formally with a video montage later on, but what do you think, Francesca? Did you see this coming?
Please tell me there's, I will remember you.
Exactly.
Did not see this coming, but I gotta say, I do not like Kellyanne Conway. Obviously, she is the griftiest of the grifters, and has made me actually feel crazy, like physically ill and crazy at the same time. But like, their therapist, their family therapist is doing a very good job right now. Like, this is what they've needed to do. She's still been in this marriage with George. Now the kids, you know, are getting a little lefty. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen some of that. And so
Maybe Antifa.
No, but this is the thing. It's like, I think, is it wrong to say I'm kind of happy for this couple that I don't have any personal connection to and actually don't really care about? And, you know, like, they're both Republicans. Yeah. Like, who cares? Why?
Yeah. But
like, good for them on a family level of like, hey, we're gonna maybe take a break and like work some stuff out, because we've been publicly fighting for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And our personal lives have been dragged out into the public sphere. Let's reclaim a little bit of that, you know.
Yeah, I guess in an abstract sense, you know, I wish this couple the best. You know, marriage is difficult in the best of times. And thanks to Kellyanne Conway's work, in no small part, we're not in the best of times. George is probably also pretty terrible. I don't know much about him. But anyway, yeah, no, I hope for their family's sake, at least, that they actually use this time well. We'll see, though. Let's add a little bit of context to this. Claudia Conway, their, I believe, 15-year-old daughter, who, because in America, we really do want dynasties, has like a 500,000 Twitter followers. That's weird. But anyway, she tweeted, "My mother's job ruined my life to begin with. Heartbreaking that she continues to go down that path after years of watching her children suffer. Selfish, it's all about money and fame, ladies and gentlemen." Yeah, I look, totally. I mean, we pointed out the grift. I don't disagree with that. Saying it on social media, that's it seems like it's part of it. But anyway, she said, "I'm officially pushing for emancipation. Buckle up, because it's probably going to be public one way or another, unfortunately." But it is a tweet, though, so it's definitely public right now as you're tweeting that. "Welcome to my life." And look, I feel terrible for her, obviously. No kid, especially no 15-year-old, should have to go through any of this. It's got to be devastating. And to know that your parents, in different ways, sort of support a lot of the ideology of what she appears to, you know, not agree with, that's got to be devastating. And hopefully this will help. But I just, and again, I'm a dinosaur. I don't TikTok or whatever. I will grant you that. I think that the last thing all of this needs is to be more public and online. That would be my guess. I don't think that helps anyone. It's totally their right to do that if they want to, even down to the teens. If that's what they want to do, they can do it. And I hope that it works. I just don't think that that's gonna help, probably.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about Claudia Conway. But I will say, being a young woman and online and having lots of followers, and whether you like it or not, being in the public sphere, I'm rooting for her. I'm like, you know, she's on TikTok going like, "Let's talk about socialism." Like, she really is. And I'm like, let's talk about socialism.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm rooting for her that, first of all, she can live a normal life and actually develop away from social media, i.e. away from sort of the lure of the grift, because I think having that many followers, becoming your own brand, I don't know, super young, like, you could easily fall, like, look at your mom, you know what I mean? It's easy to fall into the grift. But it seems like she's asking interesting questions, and she's representing this, like, you know, progressive leftist youth that I think is very curious right now. And I kind of love her for that.
Yeah, totally.
So she must be upset, of course, that like her mom's like, because there's only thing worse than Kellyanne Conway being in the Trump administration is Kellyanne Conway being in your own home. that's gotta suck.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. Yeah, and look, obviously, she, like, you know what we say, we don't know exactly what to feel. I don't want to have any feelings about any 15-year-old, honestly. Like, honestly, like, if I, what was social media like when I was 15? We had ICQ. You all watched, you don't even know what that is. And we had AOL Instant Messenger. That was as public. And I think I had a GeoCities page with a message board or like a guest book. That's all, and a ticker for when someone went to the site. I wish everyone the best, including Claudia, especially because she seems far more left than the rest of the family. So clearly she's the best of the family. Having 500,000 followers or 1 million followers or 5 million followers, I don't know that any teen can not be significantly affected by that in ways that are probably not going to be universally good. You could do it. You could totally do it. And there's lots of famous young people that have not, that on TikTok, on Instagram, on YouTube. That's been YouTube for literally years. None of this is new. But I do have a lot of worries about what, like, you can't, like, people in their 30s that become famous really fast are ruined by it most of the time. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Kellyanne Conway is going away. We might not get much more Kellyanne Conway. So we thought we would just do a little bit of a walk back through some of her notable moments. So our producer, Marissa, put together this mashup. Take a look.
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. What it, you're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains. Wait a minute.
Alternative facts?
Obama had a 6-month ban on the Iraqi refugee program after two Iraqis came here to this country, were radicalized, and they were the masterminds behind the Bowling Green massacre. Most people don't know that because it didn't get covered.
The Bowling Green massacre that Conway mentioned never happened.
Do you think I ran a campaign where white supremacists had a platform? You going to look me in the face and tell me that?
It did. Kellyanne
really?
Did.
Oh, and that's how you lost?
It did.
Do you think you could have just had a decent message for the white working class voters? Do you think this woman who has nothing in common with
anybody?
I'm not
saying that's what you want.
It's Hillary Clinton. She doesn't connect with people. How about they have nothing in common with her?
First of all, his entire America First campaign doctrine is that he would always look out for the interests of this country. And North Korea and the rest of the world would know, Charlie, that President Trump and Vice President Pence aren't messing around with anybody who's trying to threaten our lives.
Think short of devastating. North Korea, if they had the capacity,
would it be diplomatic or military response?
He would make sure that they would never use it.
How?
He's not going to reveal all of his plans. Now, he's made that very clear. And maybe somebody can ask him in a debate.
Americans did that. Can you imagine what we would say to them?
I'm not going to bring my kids into this.
I will. If my kid did something like that, it'd be a really tough day.
But look, you have to listen to what the president-elect has said about that. Why don't you believe him? Why does everything taken at face value? 62% of Americans, according to CNN's polling, said Hillary Clinton can't tell the truth about anything. And yet,
she was given the benefit
of the doubt here constantly.
When?
You can't give him the benefit of the doubt on this, and he's telling you what was in his heart. You always want to go by what's come out of his mouth rather than look at what's
The only thing that's in his heart is Filet-O-Fish. We know that. Yeah, that was in reference to him doing the physical mocking of a reporter who has a physical disability. Yeah, no, I don't care what's in his heart. There's nothing in his heart. It's ash. It's waste in his heart. He was mocking a guy for his physical disability. Literally everyone knows that. I don't think that it's bombastic to say that Donald Trump is far and away, whatever word you want to apply, the worst, the biggest, the most hyperbolic liar that we have ever experienced as a country, in public office, in a public position. No one lies worse than Donald Trump. Anyway, God, she was good at her job, I guess, because she would just keep going no matter how absurd it was with her collusion, delusion signs and stuff like that. But she was just a massive, massive liar. And I kind of wish that she had not been put on so much over and over and over.
Gosh, absolutely. Keeps having her on. That was one of the best SNL sketches, was calling Kellyanne Pennywise and Kate McKinnon playing Kellyanne. So, so good.
She did a good one.
Stalking Jake Tapper, like, why do you keep having me on the show? Have me on. I have to say, I've never seen someone with such a small brain, like just with so little to work with, do so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think she's necessarily not smart. I'm just saying, like, her worldview is this. She has this much to work with in the Trump administration, and she did a lot with it. She spun the Trump administration in a bazillion different ways, backwards and forwards, left to right. Like, she truly was able to do a lot when it came to lying for this president. So, honestly, better than I think I've ever seen. Whereas Sean Spicer sort of like froze up and didn't know what to do. Kellyanne just kept running her mouth. and was able to do a lot. My favorite part of that was,
are you saying that like we gave a platform to a white supremacist? That couldn't be what you're saying.
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying. And you know you did.
Totally, yeah. And she expected, well, no, we're all super polite to each other. So if I just make it about me, are you gonna say that to my face? And so I'm glad that whoever that was said, yeah, no, you totally have, and you will continue to, and it'll only get worse. I also loved the little throwback where she's like, I'm not gonna bring my kids into this. Yeah, but you are though. You're gonna bring your kids into this. Bye.
Bye, Felicia.
Good. Now, you know, I guess more of the weight passes to Kayleigh. Let's see if she's up for it. To shoulder all of that lying on one person, that's a big ask, but she does seem to have no soul, so I think that she might be up for it. Anyway.
He is the North Korean of the United States propaganda machine, Kayleigh McEnany. I believe in her.
It's a death cult of personality, that's all it is, the lies that she would tell for him. The chief of staff said, Trump reads so much that I have to read late into the night to keep up. No, you don't. Don't think that. You're lying. You're lying. He doesn't even read TV Guide. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, Francesca, the first guest on the return to the studio. Let it be noted in the scrolls for all time. Where can people see more of your work? I hear that you were busy yesterday.
Oh gosh, so busy. Yes, check out the Bituation Room podcast every Sunday, 6 p.m., 9 p.m. Eastern. You can find it on all the podcast platforms. Spoke to Nomiki Konst and Aaron Gloria Ryan of Hysteria yesterday about the DNC. Yeah, it was a great discussion. And yeah, follow me on all the socials at Franny Fio.
Sounds good. Well, thank you as always.
Thank you,
good luck if you watch the RNC later. Please drink. It will provide a little bit of protection against the corrosive mental damage. And thank you. We'll see you soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Excited to welcome back to the program, host of the Tom Hartman program and author of a great many books. The latest, The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream. Tom Hartman, welcome to the Damage Report.
John, it's great to be back with you. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back on. You know, I've been trying to do a little bit of writing during the pandemic, but I'm not putting out books nearly at the rate that you are. So, you know, we've broken down a few of your past books on the program. This is obviously an incredibly important one. What made you choose to turn to the topic of monopolies and the history of those?
Well, when we first when I first suggested to BK, the publisher of Bear Kohler, the publisher of these books back, I don't know, a couple of years ago, that we do a series of relatively small books that could be read in a weekend or even in a day if somebody really wanted to commit some time to it. They're about a half or a third the length of a normal book, and the suggestion was, let's pick a whole series of topics, and when we're all done, the books can be put side to side, and you'd have basically a history of America in a whole bunch of different areas. And we wanted to pick out the things that we thought were having the greatest and most consequential impact on the quality of life in our country. So we started with guns and the Second Amendment. From there, we went to the United States Supreme Court and the ways that they have basically been screwing America aggressively since the 1970s, and what can be done about it. And then from there, you know, we wrote this last book about which you and I talked about the hidden history of the Republican war on voting, and we're living that right now. And then monopolies. The average American is paying, the average American family is paying about $5,000 a year, every year, in what I call a monopoly tax. It's not actually a tax, it's higher prices that we're paying because of monopolies. Internet, for example, and you know, most developed countries offer high quality, high speed internet, typically 1 gigabyte up and down. South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, most of Europe. For $20 to $35 a month. Here in the United States, it costs more than twice that, and the quality sucks. Why? Because we have basically a small handful of companies that control the internet.
Wow.
You know, for our country. That's just one small example. You add up all these examples, from pharmaceuticals to hospitals to the food services to hotel. I mean, pick an industry. They're all monopolized. Airlines, and the average American family is paying $5,000 a year more than they should just because of this monopoly situation in America.
That is absolutely amazing. A significant chunk of their entire income. It's a great example you provide. I mean, my internet is at least 5 times that average that you talked about. That's hugely consequential. And of course, I wanted us to focus on, you know, we have to talk about the history of this, how we got to this place, how monopolies interact with and influence governments. But for a lot of people, I think it might be very easy to think of monopolies as a thing of a pastime in America. That's not something that we need to deal with. But I would say even, you know, in the time that you're writing this book, I mean, there have to be a lot of new concerns about certain sorts of monopolies developing in the tech industry, social media. We have a lot of conversations as a country about those sorts of things. So what are some more of the ways that monopolies influence outcomes for American consumers and workers?
Well, first off, as companies get bigger and bigger and gain more and more dominance over their industries, in addition to size and wealth, along with that size and wealth comes political power. You know, an airline as large as United or American can easily buy, you know, hundreds of members of Congress with basically their entertainment budget, you know, a chump change. And for example, and do so in any state in the union as well. So number one, our entire political process has been corrupted by these monopolies, whether it's, you know, the Facebook monopoly or whether it's the airline oligopoly. Most industries, it's not a true monopoly, it's an oligopoly. That is to say, it's 2 to 5 companies that control more than 80% of the industry, all the economic activity. And they function as a monopoly, though. You know, if United raises their prices 10 bucks, within 5 minutes, Delta will have raised its prices 10 bucks on the same routes. They all monitor each other. So they functionally work together as a monopoly. So, you know, this is one of the big problems. Back in the 60s, in the early 60s, and you know, talk to somebody my age who will enthusiastically tell you about this. There was this really cool TV show in the late 50s, early 60s called Route 66. And Martin Milner and George Maharis were driving this Corvette from basically New York to Los Angeles. This was before the Eisenhower Interstate Highway System was completed. And the only way to get from coast to coast was on Route 66, which most of it was a 2-lane road all the way across America that went through all these thousands of little towns. And every week they'd be in another little town. And they'd have an adventure, you know, and you could always tell where they were. You know, if they were in Biloxi, Mississippi, there was the Biloxi Diner and the Biloxi Bank and the Biloxi Hotel, and they were all, you know, locally owned businesses, and Jacobson's Furniture and Sam's Dry Cleaners and you know, businesses that have been passed down in families for generations. All of that is gone. If you were to drop out of an airplane from 60,000 feet and just land in any random part of America today, you would have no friggin' idea where you are because it's the same Olive Garden and Holiday Inn and Marriott and McDonald's and Wells Fargo or Bank of America. And the result of this isn't just the homogenization of America's business culture. I mean, that's bad enough. But you know, that's more of an aesthetic concern. The real concern is that it's no longer possible, or at least as easy as it was prior to the Reagan era, prior to the 1980s, when all this changed. It's no longer possible to start a small business. It's no longer possible to hang on to a small business. It's no longer possible to have a family business. You can't compete with giant companies. You know, when Walmart moves into a neighborhood, they wipe out on average 140 local businesses. And those local businesses, and it's not just Walmart, obviously, and those local businesses are just being devastated. And then, of course, now we've got COVID on top, putting this on steroids. So we need to be breaking up these big companies, and we need to go back to enforcing the laws that were passed in the 1880s to stop this from happening in order to basically restore vibrancy and health to our economic system, to our economic landscape. Yeah.
You know, I guess this is sort of one of the natural troubles potentially of writing history books that are deeply tied into what's going on right now. That, you know, you talked about the war on voting, and now you have, I mean, you could do an entire book on the last 6 months leading up to this election. In the same way, you know, when you talk about monopolies, you mentioned that obviously that's interacting with the pandemic. I mean, people can't go to the vast majority of places that are selling products. And I would imagine that many people are probably relying on things like Target and ordering things from Amazon. Do you think that, is that a temporary thing? Do we, in a year, will we be basically back to the position we were in? Or is this just going to, you know, throw gasoline on the sort of thing that you're talking about?
It already has. There are different estimates being offered by different people, but the general consensus seems to be that at least a quarter of the small and medium-sized businesses that have been shuttered since March will never return. And and of course the big businesses, the giant monopolistic corporations, they've all been bailed out. They've gotten trillions of dollars, out of Congress, and now they're getting it out of the Fed. The Fed has created out of thin air $7 trillion, 1/3 of the entire country's GDP, and they're using it to buy corporate bonds, in other words, to loan corporations money at basically no interest, and to buy stock to support the stock market. And I'm concerned, frankly, that if Joe Biden wins the election, the day that that's announced, the head of the Fed, Lewis Powell, who is the first Fed chair in a long, long time, who is not an economist. He's actually a former managing director of the Carlyle Group, the big banking group that in some defense companies. That's how he became a multimillionaire. And his BA is in politics, not economics. His degree, his college degree. And I'm concerned that the day that Joe Biden gets announced as the winner of the election, Powell will say, okay, that's it. We're no longer going to buy stocks and bonds, which, by the way, the Fed has never done in its history. And there's a whole body of law out there suggesting it's a crime what he is doing, that it goes way beyond their legal purview, that he'll just say, that's it. We're no longer, we're going to take our $7 trillion and go home. And the market will immediately crash. And everybody will say, oh, it's because the Democrats got elected. I mean, get ready.
No, well, surely the media will make sure that people understand what really happened. Anyway, that's absolutely ridiculous. Okay, so what you're talking about is obviously scary. I mean, some of it, obviously, we get an idea of the consolidation of these companies and things like that. But the idea that on top of everything else bad that's going on in 2020, that might be accelerating that trend is certainly scary. So is this an inevitability? Are we moving every day? We move another step towards, a cyberpunk future of corporations that not only control all trade, but government as well. Or are there reasons to believe, potentially in the experience of other countries, that this is not necessarily a one-way street that we're traveling down?
We are the only developed country in the world that does not enforce anti-monopoly laws. In fact, most of the pressure for Facebook, for example, to break up or divest itself of things like Instagram is coming from Europe. And the big challenges to Google and Amazon are coming out of Europe. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen in America as we go into the future is anybody's guess. Historically, though, you look at the eruptions of anti-monopoly furor or fervor or both. One was in the 1890s in response to John Rockefeller. That was the Sherman Antitrust Act. The Clayton Antitrust Act was in the 1930s. Again, in response to the big, actually the banking, steel and oil monopolies were reforming. And then in the 1950s, the Antitrust Act of, I think it was 1956. And in 1982 or 83, Ronald Reagan ordered the Justice Department, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the Commerce Department to stop enforcing those three laws. And so, and nobody has turned them back on yet, but they're still on the books. And so I think at a certain point, Americans are going to say, okay, we're tired of being screwed. We're tired of being, screwed. I don't know how to say it other than
that.
So bring it back. And I'm seeing that. I'm seeing more and more books coming out about this. I've seen more and more articles. I think if we have a Democratic administration and an overwhelming number of Democrats in the House and Senate at the federal level, you're going to start seeing action on this. It really is the thing that has most damaged workers' ability to have any say in the workplace. The quality of our life for consumers, the ability. I mean, we pay more than twice for drugs what any other developed country in the world does, for example. It's because of the drug monopolies. So, I mean, people are starting to figure it out.
I certainly hope so, because you've done a great job of demonstrating how consequential this is. I mean, I was talking with a friend of mine about, I'm personally very interested in history. And unfortunately, a lot of history can feel very divorced from what we're experiencing. But I think that one of the great things about your series is that it is entirely entirely connected to what's going on. And many of the challenges that your history fleshes out are challenges that we are still currently facing. So hopefully people will take a look and learn quite a bit about where we might go from here. The book is The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream. Tom Hartman, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, John. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.